This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Welcome to Inside Commodity Futures. My name is John Payne. I'm joined here by in a minute by Craig Turner. Thanks for joining us today. It's been about, week and a half since we last did the podcast on January 28th. So just to recap price action between now and then, corn down 7 cents from 368 to 361, wheat down closer to 15 cents on the Chicago side from 472 to 457, beans down about 5 cents from 868 to 863, crude oil, the big whopper, down $5 from 3308 to 28 as it sits where we're doing this now, and the E-mini S&P 500 down about 40 points from 1880 to 1840. So Craig and I will discuss all of that along with today's WASDE report. Craig, thanks for joining me today. What do you got?
Yeah, well, we got the WASDE report that came out. You know, February traditionally doesn't have a lot of changes from the USDA. That's what we saw today. You know, in the wheat markets, exports were down about 25 million bushels, so that just popped up ending stocks 25 million. In the soybean market, I think we just had the crush come down 10 million bushels, so that bounced ending stocks up from, you know, 410 million bushels to 440 million to 450. And then with corn, you know, we had a net change. Ending stocks are up 35 million bushels. They added some use. The Adams imports, they added some use, and they on the ethanol, but they took away about 50 on exports. So I guess you can call it neutral to very mildly bearish, but I don't think it was much of a game changer. And after the report came out at 11, nothing really happened.
Yeah, very non-event type of a report. I mean, everything that was adjusted seemed bearish. Like you mentioned, pretty much exports ruled the day. Mm-hmm. And you had wheat, one of those markets right now in wheat that just continues to bear the brunt of the USDA as they raised the ending stocks 25 million bushels to, I think, a pretty good short-term record here, closer to 800 million. So
right.
All in all, we have a lot of grain around. Market seems to be trading with that in mind. But that said, you know, had we done this Thursday of last week, Craig, we'd be maybe singing a little bit of a different tune as the markets were substantially higher percentage-wise. And really not a lot of news changing things. So what do you think? Is it crude oil or is it just more the currency plays? We even see the dollar come off a little bit. We haven't gotten a boost in the grain prices. So it's a little bit of a head scratcher on that.
That's been the most disappointing to see, you know, from the in the eyes of like a grain producer or anyone who wants to be bullish the grain markets. To see the dollar come down like this and grain prices come down too is bearish. I mean, you know, and the thing is, like, it's not like, you know, this dollar move right now, you know, is based on the odds of basically of having a recession, you mm-hmm. know, which wouldn't be good for grain prices, you know, the Fed had to lower rates. They're only going to lower interest rates because, you know, we're in a liquidity crunch or in a recession type situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't like it at all. Wheat is going to make new lows here, it looks like, or new contract lows in the March contract mm-hmm. for Chicago wheat. And, you know, unless we can get some export demand or something going, it just seems like beans, corn, and wheat are going to kind of have this slow-moving trend lower, you know, as they just grind lower, and we'll have these pops either from short covering or weather issues, or we get a surprise in the demand report, and then we take the slow, you know, the very slow escalator back down. That's just what it seems like between now and, let's say, we can get a weather market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're waiting for Craig and I to talk about really something different, it won't be in the next couple of weeks. We'll find out Ag Forum back end of, I think it's the 22nd. Am I right on that? I'm not sure the exact date, but we'll find out acreage. And,
yeah.
You know, we're through kind of the meat of the South American growing season. Not a lot to write about as far as weather problems. There was a little bit of a dry concern there early in the season, but the USDA didn't confirm any of that today in the report. They kept their peg for Brazilian soybeans right around 100 million metric tons. And I think that's kind of the story here, where you have a demand side of the market that really isn't inspiring any buying and a supply side of the market that's bloated. So without new crop stories, which is really weather problems for the U.S. grower, it really feels like we're just going to slowly grind lower and maybe see that December contract eventually test 360 when the time is right. I know that it's a lot of time for that, but it's the way I feel now. Certainly, things change as the growing season goes on, but just the folks I speak with, just the bleak attitude out there.
Yeah, I agree. In terms of like marketing and hedging, I know some farmers are interested if we get any kind of a rally in a market like this. And you got to remember, a market like this is where we have big balance sheets. So there's going to tend to not be a lot of volatility. Guys are looking for certain price levels in corn, wheat, and soybeans to sell calls on old crop if they can, just because not on new crop, but on old crop. And I have heard interest in that from producers, and I've heard a lot of concern about new crop prices. So it's been, basically how to get the most out of old crop and what can they do to protect themselves in new crop. And I think it's kind of hard, with new crop here, because unless you get, like John was saying, some kind of, surprise in acres, or we get weather issues and, say either during planting or growing, it's going to be hard, I think, this year for the grain markets to get, to get a substantial rally. I think next year is different. I think as, I've heard some things in the past few weeks that I haven't heard in a long time. One was, there were some seed dealers we talked to where this time of year they have X amount of acres that usually buy seed. And maybe they're only like a 3/4 of the way filled on those orders. And there's a lot of talk about guys who have owned, bought pretty much land at the top, now can't get really the financing to do it, to keep it going and make the payments. And they have to sell and they don't want to plant or make, or make plans for planting if they don't know exactly who's going to own the land in the coming months. And I've also heard about guys, this is marginal players, those who rent land, and they can't get, the banks to really finance the operation based on where prices are. Now, it's not like this is going on all over around the country, but it's going on enough where it could have a million or 2 million difference in the acreage numbers when it's all said and done. And that could be a bullish surprise. We'll see if that happens. I mean, these kind of stories come around a lot and, or a story like that, about what a surprise could be. That could be a surprise this year. That might be a bullish card in the deck.
Well, that's, I think, what we're looking for, at least on the corn side. You want to see that number for planted acres somewhere. It would be nice if it was below an 89 million. I think for that to happen, you're probably going to need, like you said, some guys to get last-minute finance yanked from them. But even then, I still think there's probably seed dealers with product around who would maybe give it to them on the finger, so to speak, that would allow them to get it in. But when you look at where we were, I mean, we had basically 90 million acres last year, and we were at crop insurance prices were set at 419. Right now, the average price for new crop corn in the month of February is sitting somewhere on the 388 level. Mm-hmm. So you're upset. And most guys, you take 85% revenue protection on that. I mean, that isn't going to get it done.
Right.
390.8, you're looking at, really substantially lower as far as where we'll be if we don't get some sort of little bit of a hiccup here to the upside. And looking at forecasts out in the South American kind of short-term two-week period, it doesn't really feel like there's anything there that's going to threaten yield. So it'll be, fingers crossed, making sure that the acreage numbers are there. Once we get that, we'll look at the planting pace and the weather. So as we move out of this kind of slower doldrums period for grains, I'd expect the volatility to pick up a little bit. On the long side, if you're long, you're a farmer probably, you're sitting with grain in your bin, Weather is going to be your friend. You want to see acreage low and you want to see planting delayed. If you're a short, you want to see none of that because the market is exceptionally short here. Open interest really rivaling, you know, the mid-2000s period where the funds were short 80,000, 100,000 contracts of corn. And if there would be a reason to buy those back, I think you see 20 or 30 cents tacked on pretty quick. So I think from my advice, I think the farmer, if you're waiting to sell or you're a bull, you need to be cautiously adding the positions down here or essentially kind of, like you said, taking positions on the board that, are going to leverage that corn, selling call spreads, things like that, that would allow you to at least make money on the grain if you're wrong. Because if you are wrong, I think you need to be ready to sell those rallies in the deferred contracts because we just don't see anything changing macro-wise, currency-wise, especially with the Brazilians really having a lot of problems right now.
Right. Yeah, so I think that pretty much says it for the grain markets. I've also been keeping an eye on livestock here.
Sure.
The cattle market, more so the cattle market than anything. Anyone who follows the cattle market, February, first notice day was on Monday, meaning everyone had to be out on Friday, and there was a lot of open interest coming into first notice day. I mean, like 20,000 contracts in February.
Which
cattle.
Way?
The specs were long. The specs were long, right? So, and the thing is, like, and here's the deal. For those of you that don't know, for open interest, for every long there is a short.
Yes.
But what's the important thing when John says which way is where the speculators? Because if the speculators are long, they have to get out, and that is actually what happened. And that's why we saw a limit down on Monday, and even today we opened up lower. I think another point or two lower on February cattle. Things have stabilized and. The open interest coming into yesterday was 20,000. Today was 13,000. I would expect us now to be maybe 6,000 or 7,000 at the end of today, and basically the market being, or even more now that the market's being gone out. And what's interesting is that open interest hasn't gone a lot. Some of it's gone to April, but there's been also a lot coming into June and August. I don't know if that's just because they're rolling positions. Or if they're seeing April as priced at 131, and the funds are seeing the fact that June and August are at 121 and 117.
Sure.
I think August is the cheapest cattle contract on the board. Now, technically it is because that's where the lowest demand is. During the summer, while the highest demand is typically during the winter months.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. It's been inflating those bear spreads, which we talk about a lot. I talk about it in my newsletter. And,
when you say inflating, what do you mean? Which like?
Oh yeah, so like August, August versus December. So August and June are getting pushed up from one the roll and two, basically the roll, because what's happening is they're coming out of the longs have to liquidate February, and then they're buying not just April but June and August, and it's pushing up those months on the roll compared to October and December. It's just interesting. You would think it'd be more in April. Because big story in for the bull side is the tight cash market, and it's not so much the summer or the back end, but I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see what happens there with live cattle and what it means for the market, and how that plays out.
Well, it's a very difficult market to short. Like you said, the spreads in the front 2 months, you look at February and April, 131. You jump out to the June, you're already down to 121. So if you want to short this market for delivery in June, I think it's a little bit more of a leap. Whereas if you have the front months, catch a rally, maybe you see some folks push some product. I think since we've spoken last, we have had a few livestock reports out, a little bit bearish. We saw the herd basically at 102% of what it was last year. So you're looking at a few more head on hand relative to a year ago, but still we're looking at decade lows if you look at the long term charts of things. And as far as demand goes, demand has been pretty strong. So if you go to restaurants or you go out, you can really tell beef price is still substantially more expensive than say pork or chicken, and relatively to the grain complex, you've got very expensive beef out there. And you would think at some point you'd see the expansion really jump, but I think there's kind of a restraint to do it just because of the way the market's set up. Cash needs are difficult here, and it's wintertime, so you have a lot of folks who want to buy on grass, but they're just waiting to do it. Folks I talk to are very short-bought when it comes to the grass, so that maybe indicates to me that there could be a little bit of a jump in demand as we get into the warmer months. But, you know, I think it's going to take a stock market reversal or some sort of change in overall conditions to get the highs taken out, because there just isn't anybody out there who wants to take any risk. I mean, you look at anything. I mean, the only reason why gold and silver have really rallied the last couple of days is because shorts have come out. I don't think there's fresh demand there. You know, I'm reaching, Craig, for anything.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, the gold market. And I think you can link precious metals in with currencies, and sure. We don't talk about them a lot on the show, but it is important now because, you know, we've seen, you know, Japan stock market was down another 5% yesterday. I mean, these are huge moves. I mean, that's a, you know, what would 5% be in the Dow?
Well, you know, it'd be like looking at if a full, it'd be 1500 points, it's 10. So there's a $750 point sell off in the day would be about,
I mean, that's
what you're looking at there.
That's a big deal. 750, 800 point, you know, Dow points in one day. And what happens is, so when, if people remember back to when the United States stock market crashes, you know, the stock market crashes, everything gets sold. But typically there are two things that usually go up when something happens domestically. One, the bonds and the treasuries get bought, and the U.S. dollar gets bought, right? And you usually see those two things go up. So in Japan right now, which is really where the latest crash is happening, is everything's being sold in Japan, the stock market's being sold, but the yen and then the treasuries that the yen have are being bought. So I think like the 10-year note in Japan went negative interest rate yesterday and today, and the yen is as high as it's been in years, so or at least a year or two. So it's been interesting, you know, and there's nothing really fundamental to going on all great with Japan, but when you see this panic, you see the yen going up, and that's pushing the dollar down. The dollar coming down is pushing gold and silver, and I think you're right. I think that gold and silver has a lot more to do with the shorts getting out, and it has a lot to do with the, you know, because of the dollar's kind of crashing here.
Sure, and I think it's, I mean, we rallied $100 in gold this year. Silver's up almost $2 from the lows we had just a couple of months ago. So it's, you know, one of those markets are stealthy. You know, you and I, we talk about this a lot, where we used to have a lot of interest in gold buyers, but none really coming around these days. I think it's going to probably take something from the U.S. Federal Reserve. But I think if you're waiting for that, you're probably going to pay for it in the short term, because it just doesn't feel like there's enough here to really warrant an interest rate cut.
Mm-mm.
And, you know,
and
that's really
put things on hold for a while. I think that's what's really going to happen. Like, the Fed is just going to, you know, they'll keep interest rates where they probably are, and they'll probably just not tighten at all. I mean, we'll see. What's going to be interesting here, too, is there's – I mean, I don't want to get too far in the weeds on how some things work in the financial markets, but there's something known as the carry trade.
Sure.
And, you know, if you have – and just for our listeners who don't know what it is, you know, when I buy a stock for my 401k or something like that, you know, I fund it with dollars from, you know, what I make here. And, you know, that's where my retirement money goes, and you buy stocks or funds, and it's all done in dollars. But if you run – millions or billions of dollars, you know, you basically can fund your investments in any currency you want to. So it doesn't have to be U.S. dollars. A lot of people, what they'll do is they'll sell the yen to raise, you know, to raise currency. They're going to basically fund their investments in yen and then go out and buy those assets. So they're borrowing yen, and that is unwound big time. And what happens is as certain assets crash, whether it be, you know, crude oil, or in this, and really what it's probably is the stocks. Basically what happens is the funds are forced to liquidate stocks, and then they have to go back and buy back the yen, which is what they borrowed is. So
that makes a lot of sense.
And what happens is when you get these panics, still there's a liquidity crunch that's going on, and it's driving the dollar down. And what is just, man, I just, and you know, you see it happening and you just think to yourself, man, I wish grains would get a pop here.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I think
because it's not going to last forever. Eventually, that panic ends, and the carry trade ends, and then you know, and things will come back to be a little bit normal in the currency markets.
Well, you make a really good point. I just want to reiterate that for everybody. What Craig basically said is you're borrowing dollars and yen, and you're going to buy assets with it. So when those assets need to be sold, you need to sell the yen back. Am I saying that right?
You're buying the yen back because you're basically
you're
a short yen
first,
position.
Right.
And you're basically selling that yen to collect dollars to to pay for assets, let's say the stock market. So that's a big hedge fund play, and it's called the carry trade, and it goes on for a long time. The problem is when the markets crash and you basically have to sell the asset, which in this case, let's say, is the equity market, and then you have to buy back the yen. And that puts a lot of upward pressure on the yen. And you'll see, if you look at a yen chart, it's not a currency that moves a lot compared to others. It's actually a real slow mover. But during times of crisis, you see it spike, and you see it spike fast. That's liquidity crunch. People getting forced out of trades. You know, the stock market coming down or whatever it may be, and then the yen having to be bought back to close out those trades.
Makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I take it you're not convinced the dollar rally's over.
In the short term, I am. I mean, in the short term, it's like if we're going to have this – you know what's interesting, John? In the past, when we've had serious like financial crises, they were U.S.-based.
Sure.
And the dollar went screaming higher, right?
Right.
What we're seeing is like Deutsche Bank – again, I don't want to get into the weeds. This isn't a global macro financial podcast. But, you know, Deutsche Bank is having some serious issues, and people are starting to compare Deutsche Bank, which is the German bank.
Right.
And because it's the German bank, it might as well be the European bank. What you're seeing is like, you know, if they're worried about another Lehman happening, what do you do? I mean, all those bank stocks are getting sold. The European equities are getting sold, and and then the euro gets bought, and because that's what happens. Like all those, when those assets get liquidated. Basically, so like if you're in Europe and you own stocks and you sell those stocks, what do you get in return for it? Euros. And so there's more euros now. And people are basically converting stocks into euros, and the demand for euros go up. So you see the euro going higher. That's you see a 5% crash in Japan. You see the yen go higher, and it's pushing a lot of pressure on the U.S. dollar. If it was a U.S. financial crisis, you would see the heavy selling in the U.S. equities and the dollar going higher. That's not what we're seeing. So,
sure.
So it's something to keep in mind. The thing is, though, this can go on for a while. That's why I wouldn't say go out and buy the dollar. I wouldn't say that, you know, the dollar is in a total fundamental reversal either, but this can go on. I mean, financial crisis even this is not full blown. It's going to take a little while to sort it out in Asia and in Europe. The dollar could, I don't know, I mean, the dollar can come down another few points. The yen can go up another few points. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the euro went to 115 and, you know, the yen made a run at 88 or 89 and the dollar came down to 94 or 93. I mean, these things can happen.
Sure.
And if they do, I've said it a few times now, I'd really like to see the grains rally.
Yeah, you would. I mean, that's key. And just as Craig noted on the euro, when we last spoke on the 28th of January, the euro was at 108.5. Now we're at 112, closer to 113.
Yep.
So we have seen that big push up. We haven't seen really the change in the grain prices yet. You're seeing offers continue to come down on the world markets, especially in wheat. I think that's what's driving the corn, wheat, and soybeans to a certain extent. But I think corn and wheat are certainly lower on that news. And we're going to need, like I said, a change in financial conditions and then also a change in growing conditions as well, I think, to kind of blow out this short position. And that is a well down the road. So you'll have to kind of stay in tune with us. And, as we move forward here, Craig, you looking at anything next week or so coming down the pipeline?
I got one little thing that I've had a few conversations about this today that I'd like to add. There has, especially not so much for the grain traders, but for the energy guys, the people who trade the indexes around the world, stuff like that. The Deutsche Bank situation is probably the number one thing people are keeping an eye on because it is like it has potential to be a kind of a Lehman episode. I think my two cents is we'll probably never see another failure like Lehman Brothers again, because after going through it once, it was just too much carnage. I would think it'd be if Deutsche Bank were about to fail, I would think it'd be more of a Bear Stearns situation where the ECB at the last minute says, you know what? I'm going to find a buyer. We're going to finance the deal, and we're not going to risk some kind of financial, basically, contagion, you know, that happened after Lehman Brothers. So it's just something to keep in mind. I wouldn't panic over it, but it could definitely cause some pain. And so when you ask me what I think is going to happen over the next few weeks and we're really looking at for Japan to stabilize and for Europe and Deutsche Bank to stabilize. Otherwise, there's just a ton of uncertainty in the macro markets right now.
Well, you can hear Craig talk more about that on his newsletter, Turner's Take, out multiple times a week. You can find that at danielstrading.com, turnerstake.com, many places. And, of course, Craig, China on break till the end of the week, I believe.
Yeah, they're not even involved in the game right now when all this is going on. Yeah.
China's break, South American Carnival is going on. That'll end. I think they're back tomorrow. Don't hold me to that, though.
Right.
And, you know, the rest of the news really should be pretty light. Not a lot of grain news flow the next 2 weeks. We'll look for that ag forum. And like I said, once we start getting more planted acreage news for U.S. corn, we'll come out with some different things that'll help you understand it a little bit better. Anything else, Craig?
That is it, John. I had a good time, and, you know, I'm looking for better news next week.
All right. Well, we'll be back next Tuesday. Thanks for joining us, Inside Commodity Futures. I'm John Payne, joined by Craig Turner. See you then.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.